Welcome back to Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It's been 25 years since movie audiences first saw awe-inspiring dinosaurs come to life in Steven Spielberg's classic film, Jurassic Park. Yet 5 films later, and possibly counting, studios are still making movies about the inevitable bad situations that will happen when large, once extinct, dangerous creatures are brought back to life.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is the latest installment in the franchise and is out in theaters now. Taking place 4 years after the Jurassic World theme park closed, heroes and anti-heroes alike return to save the dinosaurs from extinction after a once dormant volcano threatens all life forms on the island.
However, as with all movies involving dinosaurs and humans, things get complicated. To help sort out whether Jurassic World's story holds up or is just another summer film to bring in audiences, we turn to film contributor Ryan Jay. Ryan, welcome back to Lake Effect.
I'm glad to be back.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is the 5th entry of the Jurassic franchise, but I think it's the first one that tried to be a bit more than a ride in a dinosaur amusement park. What was your thoughts on it?
You're so right. I also think it's the first one since the first installment, Jurassic Park, directed by Steven Spielberg, that really honors that one in terms of tone and theme and emotion.
Also some good scenes that paid homage directly to some of the shot for shot.
Absolutely.
Like, here's the opening first dinosaur encounter, or even as simple as, like, here's a goat to lure a T-Rex.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. And just the suspense and the action, and I think the way that you're feeling. I mean, it's almost like those manipulative Disney short films, the Disney Pixar short films, where in 2 minutes they can make you cry. There are those moments in this film, and there are also just great action and effects scenes.
Yeah, I think this can be classified more of an action adventure thriller compared to the smorgasbord that the last Jurassic Park
and almost
was.
Like lighthearted horror. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of scary at moments.
Yeah, I was nervous the whole time.
And I'll never forget the very first time I saw the first Jurassic Park in the theater, because I was like, I love dinosaurs. You know, you studied them as a kid, you saw them, you know, the display at the Milwaukee Public Museum, and then you go and see Jurassic Park and you're like terrified. And you're like, what is happening? I thought I was seeing, like, you know, a cute dinosaur movie. And wow. So this movie too certainly had, whether they're, you know, almost like haunted house moments or just dinosaurs that look like they're in a museum coming to life, coming after you, it's like they're all in there.
One thing that was different from some of the past installments is that the dinosaurs themselves are not as prominent throughout in this film. But I think that the setting of, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler to say the setting is at this big estate in Northern California.
Right, if anyone's seen the trailer.
Yeah, the dinosaurs have to leave the island that they originally housed on.
Because of a volcano. And the volcano, by the way, is like another monster in the movie.
Yes.
Very cool.
Absolutely. So, you know, having this contained set with the dinosaurs and the humans all in one smaller place, I think that lent a greater feel of risk and uncertainty compared to, say, the last film where everyone's running rampant on an island in an amusement park. You know, this was, had a bigger sense of consequence.
Right. I think it's the difference between just rustling, you know, bushes and long grass where you're thinking something's there on an island versus, you're right, like, can they break free of these cages? Or you're in a room that's filled with dinosaur relics and there's a shadow. Wait a minute. Is that from the relic or is there a dinosaur in here?
Yes. Now, one thing I have to admit, as much as I enjoy these movies and, you know, have that same kid wonder of, like, dinosaurs, this is awesome, you know.
Yeah.
I still get incredibly annoyed because they create the problems for themselves every time. And I'm wondering how many times can they recycle the plot of bringing back dinosaurs and something goes wrong. That's essentially the baseline for every film.
Right. And I you know, I see what you're saying. And I think that there is a bit of tiredness to that, but I think that the stories keep coming back well and the casting is so good. I mean, I love Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, and their chemistry is so fun and so magnetic in these films that I almost want to see them do more together, and even other genres I'd take with them as a team. But the one theme that will always play, no matter how many times it repeats itself, is the corruption of greed in the human spirit. And so that is the one thing that kind of is a common thread throughout all of the Jurassic movies. We see that there is the spiraling out of control of human greed for money, for power, for weaponizing these dinosaurs. And, you know, it's kind of like, as long as they can repackage it in the right way. And I think there are enough new elements in this film in particular, without, you know, without dropping some spoilers here, that were really fantastic and smart, that I kind of forgive it that it's kind of like, oh, we smuggled in some DNA and we're going to recycle it once again and it's going to go wrong for, you know, a
blockbuster.
We're
going to leave this cage open.
Exactly.
Well, and I do think that this struck a more serious tone because it goes into the scientific and moral implications of creating something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do you have an obligation to keep it alive or do they have the same rights as other animals because they are essentially human made?
Right. And they do absolutely play up on that emotional factor. There is especially a moment where you can't help, no matter where you would fall on that side of the argument, where you can't help but feel emotional and connected to these, you know, in reality today, mythical creatures.
You touched upon Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. Do you feel that Chris's performance was not necessarily subdued, but it took a different tone this time around?
Yeah, I mean, I think he had less to do. You know, he's still the hero for sure, but he had a smaller role. I think this was more of an ensemble piece, whereas the last film was more him and Bryce and certainly the two little boys. I found another interesting note casting-wise in this film, whereas all previous Jurassic movies featured a couple of kids, siblings or relatives. This one really has one child, and it's actress Isabella Sermon. It's her first role. She's never done TV or movies before. She's fantastic in this, and her part grows throughout the film. So I thought it was interesting, you know, of course, that Chris having a little bit less work to do, but this is more of an ensemble piece.
And it also brought the introduction of a couple new characters. We have actor Justice Smith as the tech geek Franklin.
Who I love.
Yes.
He was like me in this movie. Like, you know, if I feel like his character was exactly how I would have reacted, which is so nice to see. Did you identify with him also?
Oh, definitely. Like, I would not. I would say, like, is that a T-Rex?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
All the time.
Yeah. Everyone else is super cool. And he's like, why am I here?
Yeah. Same. And I also really love the paleo veterinarian, Zia, played by Daniela Pineda.
I love the two of them together. I feel like they could almost take, you know, the franchise off on their own. But it's great having Jeff Goldblum back.
Yes.
James Cromwell was a really nice addition. B.D. Wong, who is like the one, you know, consistent throughout this entire franchise, is there. And but yeah, absolutely. The new cast members really freshened up and brought some very, very needed levity and also heart to this.
Do you think, regarding the script of this film and the direction, could one not transcend the other? I felt like maybe they were playing tug of war and it couldn't quite reach that full potential, you know, because it hinted towards some of the original awe that Steven Spielberg's original film brought mm-hmm. to us. But I feel like it couldn't quite go there. And I don't know if that's because, okay, this is the fifth movie they're trying to do, and it's proven that they get people in the seats.
Right.
But what's, you know, at what price?
I think that what you're touching upon here is something very visceral, because one of the things that I missed in this movie that I was really yearning for was that extremely powerful and impactful John Williams theme music. And it's unforgettable and iconic. And, you know, usually you hear it right when you get to the island. And this time we get to the island that's, you know, decrepit. And so we don't hear it then, or we hear it just very subtly. And so it's almost underused, the theme music. We heard it maybe three times, and even in the end credits, it's not featured largely. So usually these films had those majestic, magical dinosaur moments, and there's that sweeping, you know, and the music sort of brings in some, heightens the emotion of it all. And so I think this did lack a little bit on that end, and I think it's tied to the music, or maybe it's just darker overall, so you're feeling some of that. Could that be it?
Perhaps, but I do feel like, although it gave nods to the original, it couldn't quite get there, you know, and
right.
The music, either they gave a hint of the main theme or they maybe took a minor tone with it, or, you know, maybe reflecting the darkness of it. But I feel like also the big climax of this film was not as big and sweeping, and that could do with the setting that was in too, but
right.
I felt like, you know, the battles were somewhat predictable. You know, they have this massive Indoraptor, which mm-hmm. is this genetically modified crazy creature that is definitely scary, but ultimately you still want the moment where the dinosaurs reign supreme, you know.
Right.
Ultimately we're going there to see dinosaurs beat everyone else.
Even like when we saw, you know, the velociraptors attack the T-Rex at the end of the first Jurassic World, and then seeing that big sea creature, you know, thing. So the first Jurassic World had a very different climax. And you're right. I'd say that this climax is different and maybe smaller in a way, but maybe it is because of location. But I also think it's interesting. We're at a very unique point in this franchise because it's rebooted as of Jurassic World with, you know, Chris and Bryce. But and then this is the sequel to that. So we're kind of going to see whether or not this does well and this is going to become a trilogy, or if this is the end of the franchise, will it be rebooted again someday? If that's the case, I certainly hope to see another one. This sets up a very interesting and potentially crazy, huge sequel if this one is going to have, you know, another one. But also, one thing that we missed, because you and I kind of bolted at the end of the film and didn't stay through the end of the credits.
Yeah, apparently there's an end scene. That
there's
we,
a button.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we didn't get to see that. So if anyone does go out and see it, they should certainly stay for that after the credits moment.
Okay, that's a good thing to know, because I heard about it after the fact that we left. But that does touch on the question I was going to ask is, do they need a third act to properly either send this franchise off or just give us the kind of movie we're longing for that they're not quite getting to, like they're hinting at and building up to?
Well, that's just the thing is, like, I really hope this does well, because don't you think the way that this is set up, again, without ruining it for people and spoiling it, what would happen next? I think the wheels come off in such a big way to this story. I can't even imagine being the set designer, being the production designer for this next film in this franchise, because it the implications are so huge that it would just be unbelievable. And I would love to see them try to conquer that.
Yeah, I think it did a good job at leaving it open-ended where, you know, it could go either direction if for some reason it doesn't do well enough to get a third installment. But I think you and I can agree that it probably will.
Yeah, it should.
Eventually. So overall, your thoughts on getting people to the theater to see this? Do you think it's one to see for the summer?
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite movies of the year, I think, because of how great the story is, how great the effects are, the chemistry between the cast. It sets up, you know, the next one so beautifully. And I love a PG-13 movie that plays almost like a rated R in tone. So this is a must-see for me.
All right, Ryan. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Film critic Ryan Jay is a nationally syndicated radio host, resident reviewer on Channel 4's The Morning Blend and Saturday News, and joins us as a film contributor on Lake Effect. For other recent film segments, you can head on over to WUWM.com.